Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. You ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control buildings and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for a lead. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations who got the money. That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with your politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor, and you control the court system and the police departments. Then the fourth floor then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries, and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems, so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk own and control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March for what? Who cares? Marching has never changed anything.
many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles. The kid no one would pick. Was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This, God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said, this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and it was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I want to know what's in the door. He said, you sure you want to see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And in the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him, and then you felt like you wasn't worthy, and so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room, and I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me, and I said, I want you to do this graph for me, and that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you're having is when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on not meant to be way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on pity way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
We have new information this morning on the attacks around Atlanta that killed 8 people on Tuesday, including 6 Asian women. The suspect, 21-year-old Robert Long, is charged with murder and aggravated assault. But one police spokesman is taking criticism for his public response as investigators say they are not sure if the attacks targeted Asians. Mark Strassman is in Cherokee County, Georgia, for us outside the spa where the rampage began. Mark, good morning to you.
Good morning, Tony. This is where it began, where 4 people were killed, 2 of them Asian women. The suspect, Robert Long, told police he's a sex addict, not a racist. But there are plenty of people who believe that this was a hate crime.
Robert Long's parents recognized him in these surveillance photos posted on social media and alerted deputies who began tracking his cell phone. They forced his SUV off the highway and arrested him 150 miles south of Atlanta. But not before they say he went on a rampage at 3 different Atlanta area spas.
A white male, what is he wearing?
I don't know, pretty provocative.
8 people were murdered in roughly 1 hour, 6 of them Asian women.
This is still early, but he does claim that it was not racially motivated.
Officials said race did not appear to be behind the attacks.
He apparently has an issue, what he considers a sex addiction, and sees these locations as something that allows him to go to these places, and it's a temptation for him that he wanted to eliminate.
The working theory is a sexual addiction issue rather than a racial profile.
During our interviews, we asked that specific question, and that did not appear to be the motive.
But activist and author Helen Zia said authorities are missing important context.
Hypersexualization of Asian American women is part of the racism toward Asian Americans. And to say that sexual addiction is an excuse or a reason to go on a mass killing rampage is ridiculous. He's going to take the word of a mass shooter who happens to be white against the lived experience of the Asian American community.
Zia also said Captain Jay Baker's description of the suspect's frame of mind was outrageous.
And he was pretty much fed up and kind of at the end of his rope, and yesterday was a really bad day for him, and this is what he did.
I couldn't believe that a police captain was recounting the bad day that the killer had without a shred of empathy for the really bad day that the 8 victims and their families had, the incredible grief that the whole community is going through. And this is the kind of thing that makes people question law enforcement and whether they are really there for the people that they're supposed to be protecting.
Captain Baker is also under attack for an anti-Asian Facebook post of his last year. He talked up T-shirts that said, COVID-19, imported virus from China. We reached out to the Cherokee County Sheriff's Office for a comment, but we have yet to hear back. Gail?
Thank you, Mark. That was a moment, I have to say, when I was watching that news conference and he called it a bad day, and all I could think of is 8 people are grieving tonight. It's a guy that had an issue. He blames a race of people for his problem. And then he goes and eliminates what he thinks to eliminate the temptation that he has an issue with. It's outrageous.
It's a peculiar amount of empathy for a mass shooter.
It's humanizing the shooter. Yeah. It's humanizing the shooter once again.
Yeah.
And
well,
can I point out that the shooter is a white man who is alive after they knew that he had killed 8 people.
And he was armed.
And he was armed, and they knew that too.
The killings of 6 Asian women and 2 others at 3 Atlanta area-based spas has finally brought the conversation about the growing number of attacks on Asians over the past year to the forefront.
And yet police officers investigating the situation are doing everything but suggesting this crime could have been based on race. They're going with the suspect's words that he has a sex addiction and it might even have been due to diabetes.
Yeah. But in the press conference yesterday, Captain Jay Baker said the suspect was just having a bad day. And people discovered that Jay promoted COVID-19 T-shirts on Facebook that were derogatory towards Asians. So here's Stephen Colbert, James Corden, The View, and Jeremy Lin on CNN reacting.
The suspect did take responsibility for the shootings. He said that early on once we began the interviews with him. He claims that these, and as the chief said, this is still early, but he does claim that it was not racially motivated. He apparently has an issue, what he considers a sex addiction, and sees these locations as something that allows him to go to these places, and it's a temptation for him that he wanted to eliminate. He was pretty much fed up and kind of at the end of his rope, and yesterday was a really bad day for him, and this is what he did.
It's clear to me that this is a hate crime, very easy to charge here, Whoopi. Georgia's hate crime statute is barely a year old. It was enacted after Ahmaud Arbery's murder, and it's based on the federal hate crime statute. This is textbook hate crime. I mean, it's about race, and it's also about gender. If this 21-year-old white male targeted these Asian spas because of his alleged sex addiction, because he was addicted to sex with women, the basis of the hate crime would be gender and also race. And so that is just textbook.
I thought it was the textbook definition of white privilege. Yesterday when I saw it, I was really angry. And I think that I only really know how to speak in political jargon, and this is really bad and dangerous spin to say. I thought it was sort of giving cover, like a disenfranchised, crazy white guy has a bad day and society's pushed him so much, so he was pushed here, and that's why he went on a shooting spree.
I see on the TV that police are reporting that the guy who admits he did it says it had nothing to do with race. But why should we believe him? He's a murderer. And the fact is, six Asian women are dead at a time when that community is already living under a cloud of fear. And in moments like this, I never know what to say other than that our hearts go out to everyone struck by this terrible tragedy, because I don't have any answers.
When you think about the casual racism that's been pervasive over the past 12 months, then we can start to see the link between language and action. There are real consequences to repeatedly hearing hateful speech. People get hurt and people die.
Calling it the China virus, Kung Fu virus, that is adding to it, fueling the fire. And now we're starting to see a lot of those microaggressions turn into actual acts of violence, and it is really hard to watch. And so I encourage people to watch these videos to see this is actually happening. I mean, these are real stories, real lives.
Yeah, Andy says a bad day doesn't mean you target a minority group. Nelson says, wow, the excuses they find. Alicia says, this is disgusting. She says, how was this despicable man allowed to speak, that police officer? Who made that choice? Yes, she says, that is a BS answer. Can't believe the cop repeated it out loud as a legit excuse. Yes, and Gita, what are your thoughts?
I'm obsessed with the news, and last night I was sitting there watching, and it's disgusting. Moment, because my family members, I have Asian family members, my nephews are Asian, and we have this discussion for a very long time. And last night, what happened, what we saw was a hate crime towards women. And the fact that he had this temptation to women that were Asian working at a spa is racist itself. The fact that he targeted women thinking they were sex workers that are Asian women, that itself speaks on a different level of racism. So there's so many aspects to this, but what really bothered me was when the Jay Baker went up and almost made us feel sympathy towards the murderer, talking about having a bad day. He was having a bad day. Are you kidding me? That's what you're going to tell us about this situation, rather than talking about the victims themselves. Last night, they released four names, so our prayers and thoughts are out to that those family members right now. But I'm shaking at the idea of what we saw unravel last night, and the fact that we are finally talking about stop Asian hate that was trending last night. It's important that they go into details of this, and it really bothered me last night seeing what Jay Baker was saying on CNN.
Yeah, we're back in the situation where we know more about the person who did the murdering than the people who were murdered. And that is always an awful place to be when something like this happens. It seemed to me that they were going off the playbook where over the years, you know, a truck would explode on a city street, and then the police would get out in front of it and assure people that this wasn't terrorism, because you get out in front of it and you tell people that so that nobody's fearful. But to come out and try and get in front of this to downplay the idea that it was a hate crime, I'm at a complete loss, because It was a hate crime on two fronts. It was a hate crime against Asians, and it was a hate crime against women. And there's no way to look at this, even after, regardless of the conversation that you have with the guy that killed them, to come out of that room and not think for a second that on some level this was a hate crime. So to downplay that, like people need to not worry, we're not dealing with that right now, it makes no sense. And the way that this is handled, when it's handled this poorly at the beginning, and I'm not saying it's going to go this way, but when stuff like this is handled this poorly at the beginning, you start to get a sense of why some trials go the way they do.
Yeah. Why isn't he getting charged? It doesn't make sense. Yeah. Sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah. Jennifer says it's such a heartbreaking story, especially since I consider Atlanta my second home. The way that police officer showed cover for the shooter was disgusting. Yeah, I get the idea of not wanting to, you know, put a motive to it right away, but they start dismissing other motives or putting, you know, the sex addiction. It was a sex addiction. Oh, it was diabetes. That might have caused it. Oh, we had a bad day. Yeah, just giving him that cover is just so shocking. And just how nonchalantly he said that, you know, he's at the end of his rope and he had a bad day and this is what he did.
Oh.
People are making a joke like, yeah, when you have a bad day, you have a glass of wine or something like that. You don't go and kill eight people. And like, this is calculated. Like, he went to the spa that was north of Atlanta. Then he drove an hour to two more that were right across the street from each other. Like, he knew what he was doing. He didn't go to strip clubs. He didn't find some prostitutes. Like, it was a sex addiction thing. He went to these Asian spots where Asian women worked, and he frequented them as a customer. So to completely dismiss the idea that it has anything to do with race is just insanity. And, yeah, just once – like, I get why people get so frustrated with the police that, really? Like, really, you're not even going to consider this being a hate crime? It's shocking.
And I think you're right.
Somebody worked so hard to not put a motive behind something, and then do nothing but stand there and put motive.
Right. Yeah.
And Graham, you make a really good point about the strip clubs. Like, if this was about his temptations, why didn't he target, strip clubs? And the fact that he knew exactly where he wanted to go. And the good news is they stopped him in time because there was reports that he was going to continue shooting. So to the police, for them to stop and actually assess the situation and get him off the streets was really important as well. But we have to acknowledge this is a racial moment that he was targeting certain people at a certain time and at certain places. And I think when the officers did talk about this whole situation, it really deteriorated what really was important for people to understand what was happening with this guy. And just the way – I just can't get over the fact that we're talking about his diabetes, that he was having a bad day. Like, all of it, that's not what we should be talking about, is what's actually happened and the victims. That's what we should be focusing on. But this is a troublesome situation, and I'm just exhausted. I don't understand why this is continuing and needs to stop.
Yeah, hopefully we don't see Jay Baker in front of our microphone again.
These 10 people killed in the deadliest mass shooting in America since 2019. Flowers now lined up outside a Colorado supermarket and on top of a fallen police officer's cruiser after all 10 were gunned down. The president ordered flags to fly at half-staff and addressed the nation, calling for a ban on assault rifles.
I don't need to wait another minute, let alone an hour, to take common sense steps that will save the lives in the future.
Police identified the gunman, and his family reveals issues with his mental health. The big question tonight, why did the gunman target people in and outside that grocery store and kill them seemingly at random?
The police officer killed in a shootout with the gunman was 51-year-old Eric Talley, a father of seven. His children range in age from 7 to 20. Tarek Meyer begins our coverage tonight with more on the victims and how they're being remembered. Tarek?
Well, we have their names and two of their photos. The victims range in age from 20 to 65. One was a young store manager. Another, a man who just walked his daughter down the aisle last summer and was about to welcome a granddaughter into the family. Now investigators are releasing more about the gunman and what may have led up to this.
The man seen being led away in handcuffs at the scene of the supermarket shooting is indeed the mass shooting suspect. His brother has identified him as 21-year-old Ahmad Alisa. Relatives tell investigators he suffers from mental illness and had delusions and thought people were following or chasing him. Investigators say the gunman started shooting customers in the parking lot and in the King Superstore on Monday at 2:33 p.m.
136, we're in gunfight. Hold the radio. 136, so multiple shots being fired at us.
Boulder police secured the crime scene 48 minutes after police got the initial call. The gunman killed 10 people, including Boulder police officer Eric Talley. Talley has 7 children. His sister says he always wanted to be a pilot, but couldn't because he was colorblind. President Biden says the officer's actions were heroic.
When the moment the act came, Officer Talley did not hesitate in his duty, making the ultimate sacrifice in his effort to save lives. That's a definition of an American hero.
Police identified the other 9 victims today, including 25-year-old supermarket employee Ricky Olds, pictured on the left. She was a deli clerk and also worked as a front-end manager at the supermarket. The victims are all between the ages of 20 and 65. Alisa purchased the gun 6 days before the shooting. An arrest warrant describes him as being armed with either an assault rifle or black AR-15. He was wearing a tactical or armored vest. The victims were located in the store and in the parking lot. A green rifle case was also seen in his car. Police say Alisa had removed all his clothing and was only dressed in shorts before surrendering to authorities with a gunshot wound to the leg. While being led away, he refused to tell officers if there were other suspects with him, but he requested to speak with his mother. The arrest warrant also reveals the gunman killed someone that he parked next to in the parking lot before randomly shooting others inside of the store. The motive is still unclear. Kent?
All right, thank you, Tarek. And we've got a more detailed timeline of what happened going into the overnight hours. Officers were dispatched at 2:40 Mountain Time yesterday. Boulder police tweeted an alert 9 minutes later. At 3:28, the suspect was in custody. So the shelter in place was lifted at 6:40. And then at 1:30 this morning, the last victim's body was removed from the scene. At 3:59 a.m., all families were notified. A U.S. Senate hearing on gun violence took on more urgency today in the wake of the supermarket shooting. Janice Harris listened to comments from senators about how to fix the problem and is joining us now. Janice?
Kent, lots of discussion. And at the opening of the Judiciary Committee hearing, Senator Dick Durbin said gun violence is a public health crisis. The usual political lines were drawn, with Democrats calling for gun control legislation and Republicans emphasizing the right to bear arms for America's citizens. Senator Durbin called on action to help stop gun violence, not just prayers and moments of silence for the victims.
I could ask for a moment of silence for the mass shooting in Boulder last night. And after that is completed, I could ask for a moment of silence for the shooting in Atlanta 6 days ago. And after a minute, I could ask for a moment of silence for the 29 mass shootings that occurred this month in the United States. But in addition to a moment of silence, I would like to ask for a moment of action, a moment of real caring.
Democratic Senator Richard Blumenthal accused Republicans of having no solution on guns. Senator Ted Cruz pushed back, blasting Democrats for what he called ridiculous theater.
I agree. It is time for us to do something. And every time there's a shooting, we play this ridiculous theater. I don't apologize for thoughts or prayers. I will lift up in prayer people who are hurting, and I believe in the power of prayer, and the contempt of Democrats for prayers is an odd sociological thing.
Chuck Grassley, the top Republican on the Judiciary Committee, says part of the problem is that the police are not funded well enough. Grassley says more funding would lead to better trained officers.
And late this afternoon, we learned new information about another suspect who was arrested in connection with the attack of a 75-year-old man in Oakland. Our crime reporter Henry Lee has more on that.
I've learned that 26-year-old Teontae Bailey was arrested by Oakland police for allegedly robbing and attacking a 75-year-old man of Chinese descent in the Adams Point neighborhood. It's the latest crime against a member of the Asian American community in the Bay Area, but it's too early to determine whether it was also a hate crime.
What people have to do is not jump to conclusions.
KTVU legal analyst Michael Cardoza says in order to show it was a hate crime, the DA has to prove the suspect was motivated by anger over the victim's race, religion, gender, or disability. Cardoza says if hate crime enhancements are lodged in a serious case,
it adds 3 years to whatever the punishment is for the underlying felony.
And if hate crimes aren't charged,
the person's not going to walk away from committing the crime. They're just not going to get that added punishment.
In a separate case, Yahya Muslim was charged with shoving several people to the ground in Oakland's Chinatown. One of his alleged victims was this 91-year-old man who was of Latino descent. The others are Asian. Alameda County Public Defender Brendan Woods has said there's no evidence Muslim committed any hate crimes. Woods, the first black public defender in the county, said the case should not be used to pit minority against minority. But Karen Inman was charged with a hate crime for allegedly spitting on an Asian American victim in Mountain View. The DA says she used an ethnic slur and told the victim to, quote, go back to where you came from.
That's the type of proof you need to prove in front of a jury that a person committed a hate crime.
I'm told the Oakland victim, who is from Hong Kong, is brain dead and that his family is considering the next steps. The DA will review the case against the suspect, who is a parolee with an extensive criminal history. Henry Lee, KTVU, Fox 2 News.
I got in Amway when I was 21 years old. I'm going to tell you this story. My distributor was this guy named, my sponsor was a guy named John Walker. I lived in Cleveland. He lived in Rochester, New York. I got laid off from Ford Motor Company. I wasn't working, so I didn't have no reason to get up in the morning. Every single morning at 5:30 on the dot, my phone would ring. I pick up the phone. Hello. Steve, this is John Walker. How you doing, man? It's going to be a great day. How you feeling? Yeah, John, I'm asleep, man. Hey, man, it's going to be a great day. And he'd hang up. The next day at 5:30 in the morning, bring, hello. Steve, this is John Walker. How you doing, man? It's going to be a great day. How you doing today? John, I'm asleep, man. Hey, man, I just want to tell you it's going to be a great day. Click. Next morning, bring, hello. Now, mad now. You know, this been going on a couple weeks, and I kind of know who it is. He didn't change a damn thing. Steve, Sean Walker, how you doing, man? It's going to be a great day today. Man, I was so mad, man. I hang that phone up. 37 days in a row, he called me the exact same way because he was teaching me something. I didn't know it, and every single day I picked the phone up. Yeah. Steve, John Walker, man. Man. Yeah, John, yeah, it's going to be a great day. Click. And then one day, the 38th day, he told me how many days it was. He kept record. He picked up the phone. He said, I said, hello? He said, hey, Steve, it's John Walker. I said, yeah, man. He said, man, can I ask you something? I said, yeah, John. He said, why do you answer the phone like that in the morning? I said, what are you talking about? He said, every time I call you, I've called you 37 days in a row, and you keep answering the phone like something's wrong. I said, hey, man, I got laid off. I'm getting unemployment. You know, I ain't got to get up early, man. I said, what's up? He said, I'm really disappointed in you, man. He said, man, when you going to change your attitude? I said, ain't nothing wrong with my attitude. He said, yeah, it is. He said, when you wake up in the morning, man, you got a bad attitude, which pretty much explains why you've been having a lot of bad days. And he said, man, I hate that about you, man, because you're such a cool dude. You got so much potential. He said, man, I'm sorry to bother you. And he hung the phone up. Man, let me tell you something. That cut me so deep, man, because, you know, I don't like nobody thinking I'm something, but I'm acting like I ain't. That you don't even understand what they did to me. So the next morning, I thought about this all day. I said, man, this dude, he been playing me for 37 days. He been calling me. Next morning, I'm damn near sitting up in the bed. When this rang, this right here. Hello? Hey, Steve, it's John Walker. I said, hey, John, what's happening, man? What's going on with you, baby? I said, it's Steve Harvey, man. He said, Steve, how's it going? I said, man, I'm having a great day, man. I'm having a great day, John, man. You don't believe it, man. I got some great stuff going to be happening. He said, man, you my man. Click, and he hung up. And I wanted him to ask me what had happened, but he never did. Then one day he called me. He said, hey, man, you're going to be sheer greatness because you've learned how to wake up. 21 years later, 22, I got a gig in Chicago on the radio. You know what I was? The morning drive guy. You know what I've been doing since 1991? Every single morning, I'm in 112 cities. I talk to 9.5 million people every week. I have the number one adult contemporary radio show in the world. I wake people up every morning, and I wake people up with the right attitude because my attitude changed. So God turned me into the morning man. It's the Steve Harvey Morning Show. Cut it on and watch how I do your every morning.
I'd like to tell you about the strangest secret in the world. Not long ago, Albert Schweitzer, the great doctor and Nobel Prize winner, was being interviewed in London, and a reporter asked him, "Doctor, what's wrong with men today?" The great doctor was silent a moment, and then he said, "Men simply don't think." And it's about this that I want to talk with you. We live today in a golden age. This is an era that man has looked forward, dreamed of, and worked toward for thousands of years. But since it's here, we pretty well take it for granted. We in America are particularly fortunate to live in the richest land that ever existed on the face of the earth, a land of abundant opportunity for everyone. But do you know what happens? Let's take 100 men who start even at the age of 25. Do you have any idea what will happen to those men by the time they're 65? These 100 men who all start even at the age of 25 believe they're going to be successful. If you asked any one of these men if he wanted to be a success, he'd tell you that he did. And you'd notice that he was eager toward life, that there was a certain sparkle to his eye, an erectness to his carriage, and life seemed like a pretty interesting adventure to him. But by the time they're 65, one will be rich, four will be financially independent, five will still be working, 54 will be broke. Now think a moment. Out of the 100, only five make the grade. Why do so many fail? What has happened to the sparkle that was there when they were 25? What's become of the dreams, the hopes, the plans? And why is there such a large disparity between what these men intended to do and what they actually accomplished? When we say about 5% achieve success, we have to define success. And here's the definition. Success is the progressive realization of a worthy ideal. If a man is working toward a predetermined goal and knows where he's going, that man is a success. If he's not doing that, he's a failure. Success is the progressive realization of a worthy ideal. Rollo May, the distinguished psychiatrist, wrote a wonderful book called Man's Search for Himself. And in this book, he says, "The opposite of courage in our society is not cowardice, it is conformity." And there you have the trouble today. It's conformity. People acting like everyone else, without knowing why, without knowing where they're going. Now think of it. In America right now, there are over 14 million people 65 years of age and over, and about 13 million of these 14 million are broke. They're dependent on someone else for life's necessities. Now we learn to read by the time we're 7. We learn to make a living by the time we're 25. Usually by that time, we're not only making a living, we're supporting a family. And yet, by the time we're 65, we haven't learned how to become financially independent in the richest land that has ever been known. Why? We conform. And the trouble is that we're acting like the wrong percentage group, the 95% who don't succeed. Now, why do these people conform? Well, they don't know, really. These people believe that their lives are shaped by circumstances, by things that happen to them, by exterior forces. They're outer-directed people. A survey was made one time that covered a lot of men, working men, and these men were asked this question. Why do you work? Why do you get up in the morning? 19 out of 20 had no idea. If you ask them, they'll say, everyone goes to work in the morning. And that's the reason they do it, because everyone else is doing it. Now let's get back to our definition of success. Who succeeds? The only man who succeeds is the man who is progressively realizing a worthy ideal. He's the man who says, I'm going to become this, and then begins to work toward that goal. I'll tell you who the successful people are. A success is the school teacher who's teaching school because that's what she wanted to do. The success is the woman who's a wife and mother because she wanted to become a wife and mother and is doing a good job of it. The success is the man who runs the corner gas station because that's what he wanted to do. The success is the successful salesman who wants to become a top-notch salesman and grow and build with his organization. A success is anyone who is doing deliberately a predetermined job because that's what he decided to do deliberately. But only 1 out of 20 does that. That's why today there isn't really any competition, unless we make it for ourselves. Instead of competing, all we have to do is create. Now, for 20 years, I looked for the key which would determine what would happen to a human being. Was there a key I wanted to know which would make the future a promise that we could foretell to a large extent? Was there a key that would guarantee a person's becoming successful if he only knew about it and knew how to use it? Well, there is such a key, and I've found it. Have you ever wondered why so many men work so hard and honestly without ever achieving anything in particular, and others don't seem to work hard and yet seem to get everything? They have the magic touch. You've heard them say that about someone. Everything he touches turns to gold. And have you ever noticed that a man who becomes successful tends to continue to become successful? And on the other hand, have you noticed how a man who is a failure tends to continue to fail? It's because of goals. Some of us have them, some don't. People with goals succeed because they know where they're going. Now think of a ship leaving a harbor, and think of it with the complete voyage mapped out and planned. The captain and crew know exactly where it's going and how long it will take. It has a definite goal. 9,999 times out of 10,000, it will get to where it started out to get. Now let's take another ship, just like the first, only let's not put a crew on it, or a captain at the helm. Let's give it no aiming point, no goal, no destination. We just start the engines and let it go. I think you'll agree with me that if it gets out of the harbor at all, it will either sink or wind up on some deserted beach, a derelict. It can't go any place because it has no destination and no guidance. It's the same with a human being. Take the salesman, for example. There is no other person in the world today with the future of a good salesman. Selling is the world's highest paid profession, if we're good at it and if we know where we're going. Every company needs top-notch salesmen, and they reward those men. The sky is the limit for them. But how many can you find? Someone once said, "The human race is fixed, not to prevent the strong from winning, but to prevent the weak from losing." The American economy today can be likened to a convoy in time of war. The entire economy is slowed down to protect its weakest link, just as the convoy had to go at the speed that would permit its slowest vessel to remain in formation. That's why it's so easy to make a living today. It takes no particular brains or talent to make a living and support a family today. So we have a plateau of so-called security, if that's what a person's looking for. But we do have to decide how high above this plateau we want to aim for. Now let's get back to the strangest secret in the world, the story that I wanted to tell you today. Why do men with goals succeed in life, and men without them fail? Well, let me tell you something which, if you really understand it, will alter your life immediately. If you understand completely what I'm going to tell you from this moment on, your life will never be the same again. You'll suddenly find that good luck just seems to be attracted to you. The things you want just seem to fall in line. And from now on, you won't have the problems, the worries, the gnawing lump of anxiety that perhaps you've experienced before. Doubt, fear, well, they'll be things of the past. Here's the key to success, and the key to failure. We become what we think about. Now let me say that again. We become what we think about. Throughout all history, the great wise men and teachers, philosophers and prophets have disagreed with one another on many different things. It is only on this one point that they are in complete and unanimous agreement. Listen to what Marcus Aurelius, the great Roman emperor, said. He said, "A man's life is what his thoughts make of it." Disraeli said this, "Everything comes if a man will only wait. I have brought myself by long meditation to the conviction that a human being with a settled purpose must accomplish it, and that nothing can resist a will that will stake even existence for its fulfillment." Ralph Waldo Emerson said this, "A man is what he thinks about all day long." William James said, "The greatest discovery of my generation is that human beings can alter their lives by altering their attitudes of mind." And he also said, "We need only in cold blood act as if the thing in question were real, and it will become infallibly real by growing into such a connection with our life that it will become real. It will become so knit with habit and emotion that our interest in it will be those which characterize belief." He also said this, "If you only care enough for a result, you will almost certainly attain it. If you wish to be rich, you will be rich. If you wish to be learned, you will be learned. If you wish to be good, you will be good. Only you must then really wish these things, and wish them exclusively, and not wish at the same time 100 other incompatible things just as strongly. In the Bible you read, in Mark 9:23, "If thou canst believe, all things are possible to him that believeth." Dr. Norman Vincent Peale said this, "This is one of the greatest laws in the universe. Fervently do I wish I had discovered it as a very young man. It dawned upon me much later in life, and I've found it to be one of the greatest, if not my greatest, discovery outside of my relationship to God. And the great law, briefly and simply stated, is that if you think in negative terms, you'll get negative results. If you think in positive terms, you will achieve positive results. That is the simple fact which is at the basis of an astonishing law of prosperity and success. In three words, believe and succeed." William Shakespeare put it this way, "Our doubts are traitors and make us lose the good we oft might win by fearing to attempt." George Bernard Shaw said, "People are always blaming their circumstances for what they are. I don't believe in circumstances. The people who get on in this world are the people who get up and look for the circumstances they want, and if they can't find them, make them." Well, it's pretty apparent, isn't it? And every person who discovered this for a while believed that he was the first one to work it out. We become what we think about. Now, it stands to reason that a person who's thinking about a concrete and worthwhile goal is going to reach it, because that's what he's thinking about. And we become what we think about. Conversely, the man who has no goal, who doesn't know where he's going, and whose thoughts must therefore be thoughts of confusion and anxiety and fear and worry, becomes what he thinks about. His life becomes one of frustration, fear, anxiety, and worry. And if he thinks about nothing, he becomes nothing. Now, how does it work? Why do we become what we think about? Well, I'll tell you how it works, as far as we know. Now, to do this, I want to tell you about a situation that parallels the human mind. Suppose a farmer has some land, and it's good, fertile land. Now, the land gives the farmer a choice. He may plant in that land whatever he chooses. The land doesn't care. It's up to the farmer to make the decision. Now, remember, we're comparing the human mind with the land, because the mind, like the land, doesn't care what you plant in it. It will return what you plant, but it doesn't care what you plant. Now, let's say that the farmer has two seeds in his hand. One is a seed of corn, the other is nightshade, a deadly poison. He digs two little holes in the earth and he plants both seeds, one corn, the other nightshade. He covers up the holes, waters, and takes care of the land, and what will happen? Invariably, the land will return what is planted. As it's written in the Bible, "As ye sow, so shall ye reap." Remember, the land doesn't care. It will return poison in just as wonderful abundance as it will corn. So up come the two plants, one corn, one poison. Now, the human mind is far more fertile, far more incredible and mysterious than the land, but it works the same way. It doesn't care what we plant. Success? Failure. A concrete worthwhile goal? Or confusion, misunderstanding, fear, anxiety, and so on. But what we plant, it will return to us. You see, the human mind is the last great unexplored continent on the earth. It contains riches beyond our wildest dreams. It will return anything we want to plant. Now you might say, well, if that's true, why don't people use their minds more? Well, I think they've figured out an answer to that too. Our mind comes as standard equipment at birth. It's free. And things that are given to us for nothing, we place little value on. Things that we pay money for, we value. The paradox is that exactly the reverse is true. Everything that's really worthwhile in life came to us free. Our mind, our soul, our body, our hopes, our dreams, our ambitions, our intelligence, our love of family and children and friends. All these priceless possessions are free, but the things that cost us money are actually very cheap and can be replaced at any time. A good man can be completely wiped out and make another fortune. He can do that several times. Even if our home burns down, we can rebuild it, but the things we got for nothing, we can never replace. The human mind isn't used merely because we take it for granted. Familiarity breeds contempt. It can do any kind of job we assign to it, but generally speaking, we use it for little jobs instead of big important ones. Universities have proved that most of us are operating on about 10% of our abilities. Decide now. What is it you want? Plant your goal in your mind. It's the most important decision you'll ever make in your entire life. Do you want to be an outstanding salesman, a better worker at your particular job? Do you want to go places in your company, in your community? All you've got to do is plant that seed in your mind. Care for it. Work steadily toward your goal, and it will become a reality. It not only will, there's no way that it cannot. You see, that is a law, like the laws of Sir Isaac Newton, the laws of gravity. If you get on top of a building and jump off, you'll always go down. You'll never go up. And it's the same with all the other laws of nature. They always work. They're inflexible. Think about your goal in a relaxed, positive way. Picture yourself in your mind's eye as having already achieved this goal. See yourself doing the things you will be doing when you've reached your goal. Ours has been called the phenobarbital age, the age of ulcers and nervous breakdowns. At a time when medical research has raised us to a new plateau of good health and longevity, far too many of us worry ourselves into an early grave trying to cope with things in our own little personal ways, without learning a few great laws that will take care of everything for us. These things we bring on ourselves through our habitual way of thinking. Every one of us is the sum total of his own thoughts. He is where he is because that is exactly where he really wants to be, whether he'll admit that or not. Each of us must live off the fruit of his thoughts in the future, because what you think today and tomorrow, next month and next year, will mold your life and determine your future. You're guided by your mind. I remember one time I was driving through Arizona and I saw one of those giant earth-moving machines roaring along the road at about 35 miles an hour with what looked like 20 tons of dirt in it, a tremendous, incredible machine, and there was a little man perched way up on top with the wheel in his hands guiding it. And as I drove along, I was struck by the similarity of that machine to the human mind. Just suppose you're sitting at the controls of such a vast source of energy. Are you going to sit back and fold your arms and let it run itself into a ditch? Or are you going to keep both hands firmly on the wheel and control and direct this power to a specific, worthwhile purpose? It's up to you. You're in the driver's seat. You see, the very law that gives us success is a two-edged sword. We must control our thinking. The same rule that can lead a man to a life of success, wealth, happiness, and all the things he's ever dreamed of for himself and his family, that very same law can lead him into the gutter. It's all in how he uses it, for good or for bad. This is the strangest secret in the world. Now, why do I say it's strange, and why do I call it a secret? Actually, it isn't a secret at all. It was first promulgated by some of the earliest wise men, and it appears again and again throughout the Bible. But very few people have learned it, understand it. That's why it's strange, and why, for some equally strange reason, it virtually remains a secret. I believe that you could go out and walk down the main street of your town and ask one man after another what the secret of success is, and you probably wouldn't run into one man in a month who could tell you. Now, this information is enormously valuable to us. If we really understand it, and apply it. It's valuable to us not only for our own lives, but the lives of those around us, our family, employees, associates, and friends. Life should be an exciting adventure. It should never be a bore. A man should live fully, be alive. He should be glad to get out of bed in the morning. He should be doing a job he likes to do because he does it well. One time I heard Grove Patterson make a speech, the editor-in-chief of the Toledo Daily Blade, and as he concluded his speech, he said something that I've never forgotten. He said something like this: "My years in the newspaper business have convinced me of several things, among them that people are basically good, and that we came from someplace, and we're going someplace. So we should make our time here an exciting adventure. The architect of the universe didn't build a stairway leading nowhere. And the greatest teacher of all, the carpenter from the plains of Galilee, gave us the secret time and time again. As ye believe, so shall it be done unto you." I've explained the strangest secret in the world and how it works. Now I want to explain how you can prove to yourself the enormous returns possible in your own life by putting this secret to a practical test. I want you to make a test that will last 30 days. Now, it isn't going to be easy. If you'll give it a good try, it will completely change your life for the better. Back in the 17th century, Sir Isaac Newton, the English mathematician and natural philosopher, gave us some natural laws of physics which apply as much to human beings as they do to the movement of bodies in the universe. Now, one of these laws is that for every action, there is an equal and opposite reaction. Simply stated, as it applies to you and me, it means we can achieve nothing without paying the price. The results of your 30-day experiment will be in direct proportion to the effort you put forth. To be a doctor, you must pay the price of long years of difficult study. To be successful in selling, and remember that each of us succeeds to the extent of his ability to sell, selling our families on our ideas, selling education in schools, selling our children on the advantages of living the good and honest life, selling our associates and employees on the importance of being exceptional people, to, of course, the profession of selling itself. But to be successful in selling our way to the good life, we must be willing to pay the price. Now, what is that price? Well, it's many things. First, it's understanding emotionally, as well as intellectually, that we literally become what we think about, that we must control our thoughts if we're to control our lives. It's understanding fully that, as ye sow, so shall ye reap. Secondly, it's cutting away all the fetters from the mind and permitting it to soar as it was divinely designed to do. It's the realization that your limitations are self-imposed and that the opportunities for you today are enormous beyond belief. It's rising above narrow-minded pettiness and prejudice. Thirdly, to use all your courage to force yourself to think positively on your own problem, to set a definite and clearly defined goal for yourself, to let your marvelous mind think about your goal from all possible angles, to let your imagination speculate freely upon many different possible solutions, to refuse to believe there are any circumstances sufficiently strong to defeat you in the accomplishment of your purpose, to act promptly and decisively when your course is clear, and to keep constantly aware of the fact that you are, at this moment, standing in the middle of your own acre of diamonds, as Russell Conwell used to point out. Fourth, save at least 10% of what you earn. It's also remembering that no matter what your present job, it has enormous possibilities if you're willing to pay the price. Now let's just go over the important points in the price each of us must pay to achieve the wonderful life that can be ours. It is, of course, worth any price. One, you will become what you think about. Two, remember the word imagination. Let your mind soar. Three, courage. Concentrate on your goal every day. Four, save 10% of what you earn. And action. Ideas are worthless unless we act on them. Now I'll try to outline the 30-day test I want you to make. Now keep in mind that you have nothing to lose by making this test and everything you could possibly want to gain. There are two things that may be said of everyone. Each of us wants something and each of us is afraid of something. I want you to write on a card what it is you want more than anything else. It may be more money. Perhaps you'd like to double your income or make a specific amount of money. It may be a beautiful home. It may be success at your job. It may be a particular position in life. It could be a more harmonious family. Each of us wants something. Write down on your card specifically what it is that you want. Make sure it's a single goal and clearly defined. You needn't show it to anyone, but carry it with you so that you can look at it several times a day. Think about it in a cheerful, relaxed, positive way each morning when you get up, and immediately you have something to work for. Something to get out of bed for, something to live for. Look at it every chance you get during the day and just before going to bed at night. As you look at it, remember that you must become what you think about. And since you're thinking about your goal, you realize that soon it will be yours. In fact, it's yours really the moment you write it down and begin to think about it. Look at the abundance all around you as you go about your daily business. You have as much right to this abundance as any other living creature. It's yours for the asking. Now we come to the difficult part. Difficult because it means the formation of what is probably a brand new habit. And new habits are not easily formed. Once formed, however, it'll follow you for the rest of your life. Stop thinking about what it is you fear. Each time a fearful or negative thought comes into your consciousness, replace it with a mental picture of your positive and worthwhile goal. There will come times when you will feel like giving up. It's easier for a human being to think negatively than positively. That's why only 5% is successful. You must begin now to place yourself in that group. For 30 days, you must take control of your mind. It will think only about what you permit it to think. Each day for this 30-day test, do more than you have to do. In addition to maintaining a cheerful, positive outlook, give of yourself more than you've ever done before. Do this knowing that your returns in life must be in direct proportion to what you give. The moment you decide on a goal to work toward, you're immediately a successful person. You're then in that rare and successful category of people who know where they're going. Out of every 100 people, you belong to the top 5. Don't concern yourself too much with how you're going to achieve your goal. Leave that completely to a power greater than yourself. All you have to do is know where you're going. The answers will come to you of their own accord. Remember these words from the Sermon on the Mount, and remember them well. Keep them constantly before you this month of your test. Ask, and it shall be given you. Seek, and ye shall find. Knock, and it shall be opened unto you. For every one that asketh, receiveth, and he that seeketh, findeth, and to him that knocketh, it shall be opened. It's as marvelous and as simple as that. In fact, it's so simple that in our seemingly complicated world, it's difficult for an adult to understand that all he needs is a purpose and faith. For 30 days, do your best. If you're a salesman, go at it as you've never done before, not in hectic fashion, but with the calm, cheerful assurance that time well spent will give you the abundance in return you deserve and want. No matter what your job, do it as you've never done it before for 30 days. And if you've kept your goal before you every day, you'll wonder and marvel at this new life you've found. Dorothea Brand, outstanding editor and writer, discovered it for herself and tells about it in her fine book, Wake Up and Live. Her entire philosophy is reduced to the words, act as though it were impossible to fail. She made her own test with sincerity and faith, and her entire life was changed to one of overwhelming success. Now you make your test for 30 full days. Don't start your test until you've made up your mind to stick with it. You see, by being persistent, you're demonstrating faith. Persistence is simply another word for faith. If you didn't have faith, you would never persist. If you should fail during your first 30 days, by that I mean suddenly find yourself overwhelmed by negative thoughts, you've got to start over again from that point and go 30 more days. Gradually your new habit will form until you find yourself one of that wonderful minority to whom virtually nothing is impossible. Don't forget the card. It's vitally important as you begin this new way of living. On one side of the card, write your goal, whatever it may be. On the other side, write the words we've quoted from the Sermon on the Mount. Ask, and it shall be given you. Seek, and ye shall find. Knock, and it shall be opened unto you. Nothing great was ever accomplished without inspiration. See that during these crucial first 30 days, your own inspiration is kept at a peak. Above all, don't worry. Worry brings fear, and fear is crippling. The only thing that can cause you to worry during your test is trying to do it all yourself. Know that all you have to do is hold your goal before you. Everything else will take care of itself. Remember also to keep calm and cheerful. Don't let petty things annoy you and get you off course. Now, since making this test is difficult, some may say, well, why should I bother? Well, look at the alternative. No one wants to be a failure. No one really wants to be a mediocre individual. No one wants a life constantly filled with worry, fear, and frustration. Therefore, remember that you must reap that which you sow. If you sow negative thoughts, your life will be filled with negative things. If you sow positive thoughts, your life will be cheerful, successful, and positive. Now, gradually, you will have a tendency to forget what you've heard on this record. Play it often. Keep reminding yourself of what you must do to form this new habit. Gather your whole family about and listen to what's been said here at regular intervals. You know, most men will tell you that they want to make money without understanding the law. The only people who make money work in the mint. The rest of us must earn money. This is what causes those who keep looking for something for nothing or a free ride to fail in life. The only way to earn money is by providing people with services or products which are needed and useful. We exchange our product or service for the other man's money. Therefore, the law is that our financial return will be in direct proportion to our service. Success is not the result of making money. Making money is the result of success. And success is in direct proportion to our service. Most people have this law backwards. They believe that you're successful if you earn a lot of money. The truth is that you can only earn money after you're successful. It's like the story of the man who sat in front of the stove and said to it, "Give me heat, and then I'll add the wood." How many men and women do you know, or do you suppose there are today, who take the same attitude toward life? There are millions. We've got to put the fuel in before we can expect heat. Likewise, we've got to be of service first before we can expect money. Don't concern yourself with the money. Be of service. Build, work, dream, create. Do this, and you'll find there's no limit to the prosperity and abundance that will come to you. Prosperity is founded upon a law of mutual exchange. Any person who contributes to prosperity must prosper in turn himself. Sometimes the return will not come from those you serve, but it must come to you from someplace, for that is the law. For every action, there is an equal and opposite reaction. As you go daily through your 30-day test period, remember that your success will always be measured by the quality and quantity of service you render, and money is a yardstick for measuring this service. No man can get rich himself unless he enriches others. There are no exceptions to a law. You can drive down any street in America and from your car estimate the service that's being rendered by the people living on that street. Had you ever thought of this yardstick before? It's interesting. Some, like ministers and priests and other devoted people, measure their returns in the realm of the spiritual, but again, their returns are equal to their service. Once this law is fully understood, any thinking person can tell his own fortune. If he wants more, he must be of more service to those from whom he receives his return. If he wants less, he has only to reduce this service. This is the price you must pay for what you want. If you believe you can enrich yourself by deluding others, you can only end by deluding yourself. It may take some time, but just as surely as you breathe, you'll get back what you put out. Don't ever make the mistake of thinking you can avert this. It's impossible. The prisons and the streets where the lonely walk are filled with people who tried to make new laws just for themselves. We may avoid the laws of man, but there are greater laws that cannot be broken. An outstanding medical doctor recently pointed out 6 steps that will help you realize success. 1, set yourself a definite goal. 2, quit running yourself down. 3, stop thinking of all the reasons why you cannot be successful, and instead, think of all the reasons why you can. 4, trace your attitudes back through your childhood and try to discover where you first got the idea you couldn't be a success, if that's the way you've been thinking. 5, change the image you have of yourself by writing out a description of the person you would like to be. And 6, act the part of the successful person you have decided to become. The doctor who wrote those words is a noted West Coast psychiatrist, David Harold Fink, M.D. Do what all experts since the dawn of recorded history have told you you must do. Pay the price by becoming the person you want to become. It's not nearly as difficult as living unsuccessfully. Make your 30-day test. Then repeat it. Then repeat it again. Each time it will become more a part of you until you'll wonder how you could ever have lived any other way. Live this new way, and the floodgates of abundance will open and pour over you more riches than you may have dreamed existed. Money? Yes, lots of it. But what's more important, you'll have peace. You'll be in that wonderful minority who lead calm, cheerful, successful lives. Start today. You have nothing to lose, but you have a life to win.
California, 464.8 square miles of real estate. It takes a lot of departments and agencies to keep it going. Fire, water and power, education, health. There's a department of airports, a harbor department, and libraries. There's also a department for law and order. This is Parker Center. I work here. I carry a badge. It was Monday, June 29th. It was warm in Los Angeles. We were working the day watch out of homicide. The boss is Captain Brown. My partner's Bill Gannon. My name's Friday. Mrs. Lily Burnham, a real estate broker, had been reported missing. The preliminary investigation indicated a strong possibility of foul play.
The names have been changed to protect the innocent.
Bill and I drove over to the offices of the Burnham Realty Company, 9:05 a.m. Police officers, this is Bill Gannon. My name's Friday.
I'll tell Mr. Richmond you're here.
Thank you.
I'll just be a moment.
Oh, take a look at this, Joe. Beautiful home, isn't it?
Yeah.
You can tell quality construction. 3+10, 2 baths, built-ins. What do you figure the asking is?
The what?
The asking price. How much for this one?
Well, I wouldn't have any idea.
Got to be 42.5. Probably take 39.7 today's market.
Is that right?
You bet. I know the market pretty good.
You do, huh?
Every Sunday we go for a drive. Eileen will watch for open houses, you know, furnished models.
Yeah.
We stop and go through them, spend the whole afternoon. We've seen some great buys, Joe.
Well, I didn't know you were interested in a new house.
What makes you say that?
Well, I mean, you're out looking at all those great buys.
Well, you've been out to my place.
That's right.
What's wrong with the house I've got?
Sergeant Friday, this is Mr. Richmond, one of our salesmen.
Sergeant.
My partner, Officer Bill Gannon.
Well, you gentlemen aren't here to buy a house, so I better let you do the talking.
Wonder if we could have your name, miss.
That's right, Miss Walters. Ida Walters.
And you filed a missing report, did you?
Well, yes, sir. I'm Mrs. Burnham's secretary.
Ida phoned it in, Sergeant, on my say-so.
How long has she been missing?
From our happy little circle since Friday afternoon. Went out to show some property about 2 o'clock.
2:15, I saw her drive away.
Did you? Well, then, Ida must have been the last one to see her.
She didn't even phone in again.
Was that unusual?
Yes, sir.
The weekend, gentlemen, that's when we move houses. A man and wife, generally, they can't get out together during the week, so we spend Saturdays and Sundays sitting in a furnished model, wheeling and dealing, you know.
Yes, sir.
Now, you take Miss Lily. She's a businesswoman. Nothing would keep her from a weekend of wheeling and dealing.
Something did.
Yeah, that's why we reported it.
Maybe she's sick.
I called her apartment house. Somebody looked in.
Yes, ma'am.
But they don't think she's been there all weekend.
She might have gone out of town. Has that ever happened before?
Not on a weekend.
Does she have relatives?
There's a sister, I think, in Philadelphia. Nobody out here.
Well, there must have been a husband at one time. What about him?
He's never mentioned.
All right. Does she have a boyfriend?
There's Terry Williams. But it looks like he doesn't know anything either.
Mr. Williams been calling us two or three times on Friday and again this morning.
I see. Well, maybe there's somebody else.
Wouldn't matter, Sergeant.
How's that?
She had an appointment this morning to close the deal. No man will ever stand between Lily and the commission, or a woman either.
Maybe that's the secret of her success.
You have to understand, gentlemen, I is the president of the Miss Lily Fan Club. I work here just for money. It gives us different perspectives.
Do you need me for anything else?
We'll need a description of Mrs. Burnham.
Well, she's attractive, I guess, if you lack them cold and ruthless. Age, what would you say, Ida?
About 36.
Yeah, 36 going on 42. But she's kept her figure and knows how to dress.
You remember what she was wearing Friday?
Your department, Ida.
It was her paisley linen dress. Over it, she wore a matching linen coat.
What color?
The dress was orange and yellow, and the coat was yellow.
Mm-hmm.
And bone leather shoes with a matching purse. It's very smart.
Yes, ma'am. Anything else?
No, except we're all terribly worried. It's just not like Mrs. Burnham. She must have had an accident or something.
Something has kept her away, but knowing our Lily...
Yeah.
I doubt it was an accident.
Before leaving the realty office, we learned that Terry Williams, the missing woman's boyfriend, was the day bartender at a bar on West Adams. We also obtained the make, model, and license number of Mrs. Burnham's car. 10:50 a.m., we went back to the office, and after checking R&I, we put out a teletype describing the vehicle with a request that, if observed, to notify Homicide Division. 11:05 a.m., we drove over to West Adams to interview Terry Williams, Mrs. Burnham's boyfriend.
Good morning.
Terry Williams.
That's right.
Police officers.
Mm-hmm. It's about Lily Burnham, isn't it?
That's right.
Only thing it could be. The secretary said they were going to report it if she didn't show up soon. Guess she hasn't, huh?
When did you see her last?
Thursday night. We had dinner, a couple of drinks. Broke it up early.
See her over the weekend?
No, sir.
You didn't make a date with her?
Nothing definite. Said I'd call, maybe we'd get together.
Did you call?
A few times. Got no answer.
How long have you known Mrs. Burnham?
Guess it must be close to a year now.
She got any other boyfriends that you know of?
Don't see how she could. We were together most of the time.
But not over the weekend?
That's right. Because she wasn't in when I called. I explained all that.
Would you happen to have a photograph of her?
No, sir.
Use the phone.
Do you know if Mrs. Burnham carried a lot of cash?
She was never short, but not enough to go very far. That's what you're thinking.
That's not what I'm thinking.
Robbery? How much do you need to get mugged these days?
Not very much.
Excuse me. Got a customer down here.
Nothing on Williams. Local boy. Clean all the way through high school.
Yeah.
Mrs. Burnham's car turned up. They want it moved before tonight. They need the space.
Who's that?
Car's in a restaurant parking lot.
A.M. According to the parking lot attendant, the car had been discovered on the lot Saturday morning. It was first assumed the owner, deciding he was incapable of driving, had gone home in a cab and would return for it the next day. When it was still there 48 hours later, it was reported abandoned.
Book of real estate listings.
Keys are in the ignition.
Gas receipt, Mrs. Lily Burnham, 17 gallons.
Tank's almost full. Where'd she buy the gas?
Station out near Hanson Dam.
12 noon. Before leaving the lot, we arranged to have Mrs. Burnham's car gone over by SID. An examination of the loose leaf book revealed 8 listings in the Hanson Dam area. 12:20 p.m., we interviewed the attendant at Jackson and Martin's Super Service. After hearing a description of Mrs. Burnham in her car, he thought he remembered her from last Friday. He was almost certain there had been a man in the car with her, but he was unable to give us any description of him. We got a copy of the recent listings from the Burnham Realty Company. We also picked up a set of keys for the houses. 12:35 p.m., we started checking the various listings. The occupants of the houses told us Mrs. Burnham had not been there at any time in the past month. 12:48 p.m., the third house we checked was vacant and still for sale.
What was it, number 1223?
That's right.
Yeah, here we are. cigarette butts, lipstick on them. Could have been here a long time.
Yeah, I'll check the rest of the place.
Bill. Orange and yellow linen dress, bone shoes, matching handbag.
Yep. Mrs. Lily Burnham.
p.m. In answer to our request, a field supervisor and two radio units arrived at the scene. One unit was stationed at the end of the street to keep out curious onlookers. The other was sent to cruise the area in the hopes of locating witnesses. Men from SID were also dispatched. The room was dusted for fingerprints. Photographs, both in black and white and color, were taken of the victim.
You want to take a look at this now? Outside was wiped clean. $50 in bills.
Inside's pretty neat, isn't it?
Yeah, it doesn't look like anybody prowled it. Usual stuff in it. Compact lipstick, nail file, comb.
Yeah. Better take these beads along. They're broken.
I was just thinking.
Yeah?
This purse, the stuff in it. Not like my wife's.
What do you mean?
You know what's missing? Credit cards.
Well, we know she had a gas card.
Not anymore, she doesn't.
p.m. The radio unit, which had been cruising the area, had located a possible witness. Frank Stobie, a local handyman, told us that while riding past the house on his bicycle at roughly 2:30 p.m. the previous Friday, he had seen a man and a woman approaching the front entrance. He described the victim's clothing with reasonable accuracy, but he could not recall any details about the man. 5:20 p.m. Bill and I decided to re-interview the victim's boyfriend, Terry Williams. At the Red Quill Bar, we were told that he had already left for the day. We got his home address.
Okay, what is it? What do you want this time?
We want to talk to you again.
Did you find Lily?
We'd like you to come downtown with us, Williams.
So she's dead.
What makes you say that?
It's true, isn't it?
You got a coat?
Are you guys arresting me?
No, we just want to get some more information.
Okay. Let me wash my face.
All right.
Joe? Take a look.
If I can just get a clean shirt on, I...
You look fine.
Then you're not taking me in.
Now listen carefully. You have the right to remain silent. Any statements you make can and will be used against you in a court of law. Do you understand that?
Then you are arresting me.
You have the right to the presence of an attorney. If you cannot afford one, one will be appointed without charge before any questioning.
Do you understand that?
Yeah, I understand. I just want to know why.
Well, that makes us even.
Hmm?
We just want to know why you've got those four beads.
Oh, I can explain those.
Suppose you do that.
Thursday night. I told you about it. It was my birthday. Lily took me to dinner. Afterwards, we came over here for a little while.
Go on.
She broke her beads. Or maybe I did. One way or the other, the string got busted. I fixed it for her and thought all the beads were on it. But when I sacked out for the night, those four turned up.
Where did they turn up?
On the couch. Except one I found in the cuff of my slacks. Now, that's the truth.
Maybe. But you didn't tell us all that this morning.
I didn't think it was important then.
Why do you think it is now?
p.m. Terry Williams was booked for murder. Under interrogation, he made several conflicting statements. He admitted that last Thursday was not his birthday and that Lily Burnham had been in the habit of picking up all their tabs. He also admitted they had quarreled that night, but he continued to deny having seen her after she left his apartment around midnight. He could not satisfactorily account for his whereabouts at the approximate time of the murder. 8:05 p.m., the suspect agreed to undergo a polygraph examination. It was conducted by Lieutenant W.L. Klingon. 11:30 p.m., we were given the results of the examination.
First, let me say there were strong patterns indicating deception. For instance, a good reading on the money in the victim's billfold.
He knew how much?
On the nose. It's possible she always carried exactly $50. Some people limit themselves to a certain amount.
Yeah.
Also, a good response on the clothes she was wearing, the string of beads getting broken in a quarrel, and the general location of the crime.
What location?
Handsome Dam area. I'll return to that in a minute. I got a positive reading on the victim's death by strangulation. Now, let me ask you a question, Joe, Bill. Where was she killed?
What do you mean, Lieutenant?
Could she have been murdered somewhere else and her body moved into the house?
No, we didn't find any evidence to suggest that. None at all.
Specifically in the victim's car, parked somewhere in an alley.
You got that reaction from Williams?
Very strongly, and it was dark, rather late at night.
We've got a good witness placing the victim at the house about 2:30 Friday afternoon. We think she was strangled shortly after. Coroner might confirm the time, Joe. Yeah, we'll know after the post tomorrow.
All right, let's get back to this reaction on Hanson Dam. Could he have known she was going out there?
Well, the victim might have mentioned it the night before.
Well, I have to tell you, I got no indication at all that he knows the location of the house, or that he took her car, or that he knew where the car was found abandoned.
He just doesn't know the right things, does he? And yet he reacted to her being dead by strangulation.
That's true, but a woman being strangled in a car parked in an alley is a fairly common scene in mystery novels or on TV. Or he could have been reacting to the way he would have done it.
You mean he might have just played back to you something he'd read?
Or saw in a movie, say, in the last 24 hours. And didn't they quarrel Thursday night in his apartment?
Yeah, according to him.
Well, she got loud and disturbed the other tenants. Well, Williams may have wished he could quiet her down.
I see. Well, what's your best opinion, Lee?
Looks to me like you've got some work to do.
Yeah, how's that?
I don't think he's a good suspect.
Tuesday, June 30th, we attended the postmortem on Lily Burnham. The coroner confirmed that death was due to manual strangulation. He fixed the time of death somewhere between 2 p.m. and 4 p.m. the previous Friday. There was no evidence of sexual assault. On the basis of this information, Terry Williams was cleared and released. 11:30 a.m., Bill and I went back to the office. Bill contacted the real estate secretary, Ida Walters, and asked if she would check Lily Burnham's charge accounts. Miss Walters agreed and said she'd let us know. Friday, July 3rd, in response to a message from Ida Walters, we drove over to the Burnham Realty Company, 2:20 p.m.
I'm sorry I took so long.
That's all right, Miss Walters.
I knew Mrs. Burnham had many charge accounts, but nobody can find any cards or charger plates or anything, unless you found them with her.
No, ma'am, we don't have them.
Well, the only thing I could do was go through the files and look for old receipts and then verify that these accounts were still active.
Yeah.
It was the least I could do for... Anyway, it took time.
What did you find?
Two service station cards, diners club, carte blanche, an air travel card, just about all the major department stores, and Bank AmeriCard. I made this list.
Thank you.
Sergeant, is it true what the papers say that Mrs. Burnham was... It happened last Friday afternoon?
Yes, ma'am. It's been verified.
Then I'm right.
How do you mean?
This statement just came in today from Barton's Wilshire.
Yes, ma'am.
Well, it shows that Mrs. Burnham bought a diamond wristwatch for over $400. At first, I thought the store had made a mistake.
But you called the store, did you?
Yes, sir. They said there was no mistake. They were very positive. I knew then that there was something wrong. I mean, it just isn't possible. Mrs. Burnham couldn't put a charge on her account the day after she was... Excuse me.
All right, whoever it was stole her credit cards. Figured that way he'd buy a lot of stuff that he could sell off later. He'd need a woman to use those cards.
That's right.
Made an appointment with Mrs. Burnham to look at a house. Got her alone.
Yeah.
Then he killed her.
p.m., a description of the suspect's M.O. was circulated to all police departments. A different version of this bulletin was sent to a real estate trade journal for publication. Tuesday, July 7th, a response to our bulletin came in from Phoenix, Arizona.
Man identified as Carl Keegan, alias William Simpson, victimized 9 women in Phoenix. Same M.O., stole credit cards.
Yeah, what about the description?
Good one. This Keegan's wanted on a fugitive warrant.
Yeah.
He jumped bail down there.
1 week passed, Tuesday, July 14th. We got a call from Sergeant Jack Williams, Robbery Division. He said he thought he might have something for us. Bill and I went down to the robbery squad room to see him.
Friday, Gannon.
Jack, how's it going?
Jack, I'm playing. Got a bank series going that's keeping us on the run.
Is that right?
A couple of on-ramp specialists. They're really hitting pretty good.
You said you might have something for us.
Yeah, on that realty thing you guys are working.
What do you got?
Just got back in from talking to this woman. Lady realtor down near Inglewood. Name's Roy, Ardith Roy.
Yeah, what about her?
Says about 4 days ago, she was out showing a house to a prospective buyer. Said the guy appeared interested in the house and told her he'd check back with her about making a deal in a few days.
Yeah.
Roy woman said she wrote it off as a no sale. The guy left her at the empty house. She locked up and started back for her office. On the way back, she stopped for a tank of gas. When she went to give the attendant her credit card, she noticed it was gone. Not only her gas card, but all of her cards.
Now, the man she was showing the house to, did he give a name?
Yeah, Simpson. William Simpson.
She gave you a description?
Yeah. It's all down here. There's more.
Go ahead.
Well, she figured until today, maybe she just lost the cards or misplaced them. She finished checking her morning mail. That's why she called in.
Yeah.
She got a bill from Mallard, you know, the sporting goods store?
Yeah.
Well, the bill was for $780. Most she ever bought there was a catcher's mitt for her son's birthday.
Did you check the store?
Yeah. Clerk remembers a rather nice-looking girl who charged this stuff. He asked for identification. The girl showed him all the other credit cards, so naturally, he didn't question the purchase. Big store. Doubtful if anybody would know the Roy woman on site.
That it?
Well, that's it. Whoever you're looking for, sorry I can't serve him up on a plate, but it ties, doesn't it?
Sure sounds like it, Jack. Now, this realtor, she say anything about the man's behavior?
She said he appeared courteous, looked the house over carefully, appeared straight enough to her.
How'd this Simpson get to her purse, she say?
Told her she left it on the kitchen sink. The two of them wandered through the house. When they got to one of the back bedrooms, the guy said he'd like to take one more look at the kitchen. She stayed in the bedroom. He went to the kitchen by himself.
Thanks, Jack.
Got anything going for you?
We put a notice in the Real Estate Trade Journal. About all we can do is wait and hope it brings rain.
And in the meantime, there are a lot of empty houses to show.
And a lot of credit cards to steal.
Wednesday, July 22nd, 10:45 a.m. We got our first break.
Woman realtor out of Pacoima just phoned in. Name's Esther Jenkins. Saw her notice in the trade journal. Says she's got a date to show a house in 30 minutes.
Yeah.
Description fits Keegan.
11:15 a.m. We arrived at the address given us by the realtor who had telephoned in. Mrs. Esther Jenkins.
I think you'll really enjoy the home. It seems to have everything you're looking for.
Yes, I believe this is just what I want.
Hello. Would you gentlemen like to see the house?
Police officers.
Stand still.
You're Esther Jenkins?
That's right.
Just a moment. I don't think you have a right to do this.
We have a right to look at your identification.
And I'm entitled to know why.
You've been the route. There's a fugitive want on you. You jumped bail in Arizona. Let's have your name.
William Simpson.
Miss Jenkins, are you carrying any credit cards?
Yes, I am.
Would you mind showing them to us?
No, not at all. I always carry them with me. That's strange. I had them just a few minutes ago.
Yes, ma'am.
I'm positive. I always carry them with me.
I hope you're not accusing me of taking them.
Well, now, maybe your name's Esther Jenkins. That's what it says on these credit cards.
You can't do a thing until I talk to my attorney.
Miss Jenkins?
Yes. Those are mine, all right.
All right, put your hands behind your back.
Just a minute. Who do you think you're pushing around?
We're not pushing you around, but since you don't seem to know, I'll tell you what your name is. It's Carl Keegan. You killed a realtor by the name of Lily Burnham, just like you would have this woman if she'd found out you stole these cards.
You can't prove any of that.
Well, we're going to try.
You made a mistake, and I'm not going to pay for it.
You're going to use a credit card?
Just seen is true. The names were changed to protect the innocent.
On September 20th, trial was held in Department 185, Superior Court of the State of California for the County of Los Angeles. In a moment, the results of that trial. The suspect was found guilty of murder in the first degree. Murder in the first degree is punishable by death or confinement in the state prison for life, at the discretion of the court or jury trying the same. Subsequent investigation led to the identification and arrest of Carl Keegan's female accomplice, who was tried and found guilty on five counts of forgery. Forgery is punishable by imprisonment in the state prison for not less than 1 year, nor more than 14 years, or by imprisonment in the county jail for not more than 1 year. Today's podcast is titled, Is It Okay? Oh, wait a minute. Okay, that's for the dragnet. Is it okay to have a... Okay, that's it. Is it okay to have a bad day? Let's play this real quick short clip of what one of these police chiefs said.
We have new information this morning on the attacks around Atlanta that killed 8 people on Tuesday, including 6 Asian women. The suspect, 21-year-old Robert Long, is charged with murder and aggravated assault. But one police spokesman is taking criticism for his public response as investigators say they are not sure if the attacks targeted Asians. Mark Strassman is in Cherokee County, Georgia, for us outside the spa where the rampage began. Mark, good morning to you.
Good morning, Tony. This is where it began, where 4 people were killed, 2 of them Asian women. The suspect, Robert Long, told police he's a sex addict, not a racist. But there are plenty of people who believe that this was a hate crime. Robert Long's parents recognized him in these surveillance photos posted on social media and alerted deputies who began tracking his cell phone. They forced his SUV off the highway and arrested him 150 miles south of Atlanta. But not before they say he went on a rampage at 3 different Atlanta area spas.
A white male, what is he wearing?
I don't know, pretty calm, okay.
8 people were murdered in roughly 1 hour, 6 of them Asian women.
This is still early, but he does claim that it was not racially motivated.
Officials said race did not appear to be behind the attacks.
He apparently has an issue, what he considers a sex addiction, and sees these locations as something that allows him to go to these places, and it's a temptation for him that he wanted to eliminate.
The working theory is a sexual addiction issue rather than a racial profile.
During our interviews, we asked that specific question, and that did not appear to be the motive.
But activist and author Helen Zia said authorities are missing important context.
Hypersexualization of Asian American women is part of the racism toward Asian Americans. And to say that sexual addiction is an excuse or a reason to go on a mass killing rampage is ridiculous. He's going to take the word of a mass shooter who happens to be white against the lived experience of the Asian American community.
Zia also said Captain Jay Baker's description of the suspect's frame of mind was outrageous.
And he was pretty much fed up and kind of at the end of his rope, and yesterday was a really bad day for him, and this is what he did.
I couldn't believe that a police captain was recounting the bad day that the killer had without a shred of empathy for the really bad day that the 8 victims and their families had, the incredible grief that the whole community is going through. And this is the kind of thing that makes people question law enforcement and whether they are really there for the people that they're supposed to be protecting.
Captain Baker is also under attack for an anti-Asian Facebook post of his last year. He talked up T-shirts that said, COVID-19, imported virus from China. We reached out to the Cherokee County Sheriff's Office for a comment, but we have yet to hear back. Gail?
Thank you, Mark. That was a moment, I have to say, when I was watching that news conference and he called it a bad day, and all I could think of was 8 people are grieving tonight. It's a guy that had an issue. He blames a race of people for his problem. And then he goes and eliminates what he thinks to eliminate the temptation that he has an issue with. It's outrageous.
It's a peculiar amount of empathy for a mass shooter.
It's humanizing the shooter. Yeah. It's humanizing the shooter once again.
Yeah.
And can I point out that the shooter is a white man who is alive
after they knew that he had killed eight people.
And he was armed.
And he was armed, and they knew that, too.
Oh, wait a minute. Had to take myself off speaker. All right, so is it okay? That's the question of the day. Is it okay to have a bad day? Of course, you have to put all of that in context. So we put a solution out earlier in the podcast when we played Earl Nightingale's The Stranger's Secret. You become what you think about. Anyway, any comment on the Atlanta shootings, as well as, it's amazing, this country really racializes as much as possible. I'm not going to say every news story, but a lot of news stories. That's us, I guess, in the United States. And the case out in Boulder, Colorado, I'm thinking, particularly the one that had, well, both of them were horrific, is I'm glad I have apps on my phone, so if I don't want to go in public grocery shopping, I got a couple of apps on my phone where I can just order through my phone and have them come to the house. Okay, anyway, let's go to the phone lines here. 314, your mic is open.
Yeah, man, I went to school with Detective Friday.
With? Jack Webb?
Yeah, we played baseball with Bill.
okay.
No, I'm kidding.
Well,
look.
Let's see.
Let me make comments on what you got going on. It tickles me how they jump. You got these news media nowadays that's jumping on white males the way they are and saying that they're probably inspired, well, they don't do it now, inspired by Donald Trump, and saying it's a hate crime. The man said he didn't have no contingencies toward hate with these sex workers, and they probably was in the country illegally. And he said he has a sex addiction going to these massage parlors.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the news is saying that it's an attack on females. Well, what is transgender athletes? Is that not an attack on females, too? Another point. In Atlanta, you got a supreme black quarterback that plays for Houston.
Mm-hmm.
His name is Deshaun Watson. He has had, like, I think I read 22 complaints by workers at these massage parlors.
Okay.
As acting in an inappropriate behavior. You know, getting women to, I don't know, I really don't know what goes on. I just read what I read. You know, come in contact with his personal parts and stuff like that and touching them. And
mm-hmm.
You hear nothing about those. Is that not also an attack on women?
Well, you know, media, they pick and choose, cherry pick.
Yeah, they do. They're always trying to stir up a bunch of crap, but they don't. And that's black privilege. This guy is a black quarterback, athlete, and he's not being drugged and ridiculed through the news. And, of course, don't athletes always seemingly get those type of privileges? I know people going to get mad, but they don't think. You got to think on this. This guy that was in Colorado that was doing the shooting, well, he's a Muslim. Where is the mentioning of that? They mentioned that the other guy is white. Well, why come they don't mention that the guy that done the shooting in Colorado is a Muslim, Elisi? He's a Syrian extraction, where Joe Biden just resumed bombing of Syria and killing innocents. And he's been bullied. People call him names and stuff because he's a Muslim. Kind of like people call black conservatives names because they voted for Donald Trump or conservative.
Or conservative.
Bullying. Yes, you've heard the bullying.
Yep.
See, when these things go on and these news media start reporting, and being that it's hyper with the advent of President Trump, those that pay attention don't have a difficult time hearing the hypocrisy. Like in New York with Governor Cuomo, who came out as a hashtag, I believe her, when it was women drawing allegations on Judge Kavanaugh, nominee for Supreme Court by Donald Trump, and also allegations on Donald Trump having been involved with females in an inappropriate way, which, by the way, none was ever proven. And as the case with Stormy Daniels, she was required to pay over close to $200,000 in a defamation suit against President Trump. Got to pay attention to these narratives.
The Stormy Daniels thing, that got thrown out of court, didn't it?
Yeah, it was thrown out, but she owed him money. Just like Tawana Bradley with the deal with Al Sharpton, trying to say that those white athletes from had took her and done all kind of things to her, smeared feces on her, wrote a bunch of disparaging languages on her body.
I noticed that after that case,
she got sued. Yeah,
okay.
How did that turn out?
She got a judgment
against
her?
Well, she's only paid, her suit has increased up to over $200,000. I think she's only paid maybe $1,000 or $3,000. Al Sharpton was fined by $70,000, which his organization probably paid. Well, why come he didn't pay for her suit?
He's changed his demographic since then, too. Al Sharpton basically shows up after, I call him a vulture now. Basically, you see him on a high-profile level after somebody's dead. He doesn't, Tawana Brawley people, the living, he doesn't, I think that was the last time he came out with somebody who was among the living. Everybody else has been deceased.
The thing is that he raised all that bunch of crap.
Well, he did.
Saying that Tawana was being abused and beat on what
Farrakhan was in on that for a hot second, wasn't he?
I don't know. I don't remember all the details. It's hard not to remember that damn Al Sharpton at the time. He was big, had a little head. Now he got a little body and a big head.
Yeah, he's lost quite a bit of weight.
And then Joe Biden, who's bombing Syria, and he wants to throw the owners on assault rifle. AR-15 is not an assault rifle. It's a semi-automatic rifle. That is what it is. And by the way, more Americans are killed from knives, fists, and clubs in a year than are killed by semi-automatic rifles.
Well, we got
your shot count in Chicago as of March the 17th was 3,980 shot, 625 murders in 307 days. What did that figure out to be?
That's a lot. What's the population of Chicago? About 3 million?
It's a whole lot less.
Yeah. I'm glad I wasn't thinking about those type of statistics when last time I was in Chicago was 2 years ago. But I'm glad I wasn't thinking about those statistics when I was up in the city that day.
That's about 13 people a day. It's coming down. It was as high as 15. Well, you know, once you keep on shooting things, whether it's ducks, deer, elephants. In this case, people in Chicago, the numbers are going to come down because sooner or later you've been shot up everybody to the extent of extinction, like it is with certain animals that have been hunted damn near to extinction.
I might get some Chicago people on here this week or next week.
And you know another thing in those massage parlors, a lot of them women are probably sex workers, probably illegal, just like you find a lot of illegals working in those Asian restaurants.
Mm-hmm.
They got a good racket on that. Or they come in through the harbors there in New York. A restaurant owner will put an order in and then make sure that she gets one. A illegal come in, is ferried over to where the place is, and they go to work.
Oh, that's, there are a lot of ways, trafficking, illegal activity that goes on in plain sight, and the parlors are out there and different restaurants and different type of business establishments and whatnot. Anyway, Pianki, I'm going to cut it short I'm going to cut it on time today because I got some things to do, but we'll be back tomorrow.
Yeah, you might get a refund.
No, I doubt that. All right, talk to you.